Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us on Three Women, Three Ways. We're the radio show that talks about current events and current issues and social change, and we've all come from our own perspectives, which are somewhat similar but also very, very different. And right now I have with me Deborah Adams and Pinkley, Connie Sue. Connie Sue, why don't you start out and introduce yourself a little bit?
Sure. Good morning, ladies and listeners. This is Connie Sue, or also known as the Pink Lady or Pinkley. It's a pleasure to be here this morning with you. I am a survivor of domestic violence, and that is a common theme that has brought us together initially as business partners and friends have been involved in the sexual assault and domestic violence anti-violence movement for the last 15 years. And just enjoy our time this morning. We have an interesting topic, but I'm going to toss it over to Deborah.
Hey, good morning. This is Deborah Adams. I hail from Southwest Washington State, and I'm happy to be here joining my diva sisters. I have a tagline for myself. It's called, I have lived it, I have studied it, and I have worked it. And I'm talking about domestic violence. And over the past 20 years, it's been a real interdisciplinary journey for me. So I am also a survivor, and I have used that experience to motivate me to work towards ending violence. So back to you, Heather.
Well, and I am currently working on a PhD in psychology, and I want to focus on domestic violence issues and issues about women and violence in general, and I'm working on my dissertation right now. So that said, let's talk about our topic today. You know, we all kind of sit around and brainstorm and think about topics, and this one came to us very, very quickly, and it is about transgender, sexual gender identity and gender stereotypes. And I think one of the ways that we often stereotype people is through disparagement. And I think in the news right now there's a case of a Navy SEAL who is going transgender, and that got us thinking about, you know, the history and the issues surrounding the transgender movement and transgender, I guess you'd call it, phenomenon. And Deborah, did you have a good background in this, because you work with a couple of groups, do you not?
I do, and I'm very proud to say that in the past, in the 2000, I started working on a committee in Oregon State that included Washington, because they invited us. We're really close to Oregon. So it's called Gender Positive Systems Advocacy, and also I follow the Gender Center Incorporated. And we have been involved in a lot of conversations about this. Transgender is not a new identity. It's been around. Heather's going to share a little bit of history. But what I just wanted to say is this is not a going thing. It's a recognition of how a person identifies themselves. And here in the United States, a lot, and most prominently, we're a two-gender system. You are either male or female. And there's not really, that is a social construct. It's not necessarily a physical construct, because your sexuality comes from a place different than your physical anatomy. It's determined by your brain and other biological things. So sometimes people discover that their sexuality may be different than their physical, you know, biology. And so that has caused some consternation for those who don't believe in that, right, who are very much attached to a binary gender identification.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone says to the world, I'm transgender, what that means is that they are finally acknowledging who they truly believe themselves to be. And that doesn't mean that how they represented socially and culturally prior to that is a lie. It is based on the social construct. So it's a pretty involved conversation, and people who have to tell the world of this in a way, it feels like a coming out to them, you know, like I finally get to live my own life, which is exactly what Kristen Beck, the Navy SEAL who has recently come and talked to the news people about her decision to tell the world that she is a female.
Well, you were right about the long history behind this. I was surprised when I did some research that there are some, of course, only the famous people are really recorded in history, but it goes back to 222, where there was an emperor who was murdered because of his sexuality. He actually offered a bunch of money to any surgeon who could perform genital reconstruction surgery, and that was, 2,000 years ago, or at least 1,800 years ago. And then there's been people in the 1300s who were burned at the stake. There were mass murders of people considered transgender in the 1500s. And in 1629, a United States court in the colony of Virginia ruled that a person who went variously by Thomas Hall and Thomasine Hall to be a man and a woman, and in order to be identified by the other colonists as such, was to wear specific items of male and female clothing. So they tried this person in court and decided that, yep, this third gender is acceptable. There was a queen of Sweden who abdicated her throne in 1600s because of her transgender identity. There was Lord Cornbury in 1702, who arrived in Manhattan to be the Governor General of New York, and he created some scandal by publicly cross-dressing. So this is an issue that goes way, way back. And I remember from my childhood, Deborah, earlier you mentioned Christine Keeler, who was famous for undergoing this, I think it was one of the first surgeries, changing a man to a woman, and that was back in 1970, early 70s. And it's just an issue that has always been with us, but it seems like it's always been tremendously controversial. And it continues to be so in this day and age.
Wow. Yeah, and it's really a shame that it has to be so controversial. I just wanted to clarify, Heather, you said in the history that the courts decided it was acceptable to be identified as a third gender or as mm-hmm. both genders. But what we're really saying is that the court acknowledges the truth of the people's existence. It's not the court that decides it's okay. You know, that's
no,
kind of
a... I meant the socially
about,
they
right?
would acknowledge it.
Awareness that people are trying to understand things in a broader perspective than the typical binormal socially and culturally constructed gender identity. So it's an important topic, and there's really, I mean, I don't know, my personal experience is that if someone wants to tell me that they used to go by James and they want to be called Jamie now, I'm all for that. It doesn't make me think anything different. It's just we all have the right to identify how we present ourselves and express ourselves. And I don't know why that can't be changeable back and forth and still be, you know, not as you mentioned, as you said, a controversial subject. It's really quite amazing to me that we still have such a negative view of how people choose to identify themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that for most of us, it's not a big deal because it's not something that we deal with on a daily basis. I think that some people, as you mentioned, Deborah, who are absolutely wedded to either or, have a hard time with it. I didn't have time to research much about religion, but I know that there are some religions that are adamantly against this and recognizing it. But I think the main controversy arose when surgery became an option for transgendered people. And for some reason, I think society just really went, whoa. And again, mentioning Christine Jorgensen, that was back in 1952. And she actually had one of the first surgeries to change, as I said, from a man to a woman. And that was just absolutely worldwide news at the time and continued to be back, you know, for 30 years until she died. So, you know, the idea of the surgery, I think, bothers people, although in the history, as I mentioned, there are people burned at the stake and all sorts of things. So people have, some people have a real hard time letting go of that dichotomous gender.
Yeah, I don't want to monopolize the conversation here, but I don't understand that either, because don't we have plastic surgeon to enhance our breasts, to change our noses, to give us a butt if we don't have one, to take fat off our stomach? I mean, we have all kinds of surgeries to change us physically.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that this is a controversy because of the sex change, I don't know, because of the surgery.
Well, but gender is so important to us. I mean, what's the first thing that people ask a pregnant woman? Are you having a boy or a girl? What's the first thing they tell you at the hospital? Is it a boy or a girl? Clothing, room decor, social activities, they are all so based on gender.
They are.
As societies, I think we have so much investment in gender that it must seem kind of a slap in the face to some people if you are different from that, if you balk against that solid gender identification. I mean, not just with transgender, but look at a few years ago, there was a couple that decided to not announce the gender of their child, and they dressed the child all sorts of different ways until the child started school, and then they had to make an identification for school. And there was huge publicity about this and how, you know, big discussion about how this would be damaging to the child and how this would, you know, confuse the child and just all sorts of brouhaha simply because they wouldn't identify the gender of the child. So I think gender is something that we hold very dear to us.
Connie Sue, what are some of your thoughts on this subject?
Well, it's, you know, I'm sort of reflecting just on the whole experience of how I was brought up and the childhood experiences. And it, again, it's socially, as you said, a social norm that we have this identity, an either or. It's taken me a long time to understand it. I think it's very complicated, but I think that the most important thing is acceptance of however a person identifies or wants to live their life. It's not up to me to make that decision for a person, but it's about accepting. And, you know, we just, little boys, you know, play with trucks, and little girls are supposed to play with dolls. And what if it's the reverse situation and they have an interest in playing with other toys and exploring other options? It's we're very gender specific in our society. I think we're becoming more accepting. You know, bathrooms are a perfect example. We have one for women and one for men. And I can't imagine how horribly uncomfortable that would be if you needed to use a restroom and had to choose. And neither one of them fit. It's like a box that we've created. You walk either through this door or you walk through this door, an either or. And it's really about inclusivity and acceptance of people.
Well, talking about acceptance, I just read a news article the other day that there are a couple of California schools that are actually creating a third restroom option. Some of them are calling it a no-gender restroom, where anybody can feel comfortable going into that restroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming that it's a private restroom, not a, you know, a multi-user restroom. Do you know anything about that, Deborah?
Well, a lot of social justice organizations are going through that and making that available because, as you said, the social assumptions and cultural assumptions that if you appear female and you walk into a male bathroom, then you're crossing a line, a boundary. That's just not acceptable. And often transgender and transdressing individuals are at a high level of risk for assault if they were to do something like that, if they show up in the wrong, you know, the wrong bathroom. They often get attacked physically and assaulted in those situations. So it's become very important for public restrooms to afford safety for all people and avoid discrimination at all costs. And yeah, there are, there's lots of ways you can do it. You can have a family bathroom or, yeah. It sometimes the signs on doors will say, for those who identify as female, this is your restroom. For those of you who identify as male, this is your restroom. But we still have to be really aware of the possibility for that high-risk danger for people when they enter those bathrooms.
Why is it high-risk danger?
Because if someone who may be dressing as female goes into a male bathroom,
mm-hmm.
what you're saying, you know, what you've mentioned is this concern about their crossing boundaries. And just like there's hate crimes because you're gay, because you're black, because you're female, because you're... I don't know, standing on your head and everybody else is walking on their feet. It doesn't really matter. It's a case of somebody's decided that you're less than and often can be physically assaulted.
Okay. And does that become a hate crime? Is that classified as a hate crime?
It's a hate crime and it's a discrimination case. I was doing some research and I found an article on retired Colonel Diane Schroer has been awarded almost $500,000 for losing a job offer after admitting plans for gender change surgery. So she applied for a job and was offered the job, and when she went to the supervisor to discuss the surgery, she lost the job. And so the courts awarded her $491,000 based on discrimination.
Wow.
So there's, yeah, it's a form of sex discrimination.
Hmm.
Of course, the library claims there was other reasons why they rescinded the job offer, but the court didn't find that to uphold. And I found that... on the what website is this? FindingDulcinea.com.
Mm. Okay.
And that was April 30th in 2009. So she had, you know, retired from the military. She's a retired colonel. So she did that as a male. And then she applied for this job as a female and then wanted to have the surgery.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, the Christine Jorgensen that I mentioned was the first surgical patient who underwent sex change. She was also in the military. She was when she was male, she was in the military. And we talked earlier about this Navy SEAL who actually
mm-hmm.
helped rescue some people, was in the military. So before... changing genders, and it's like, wow, you know, I mean, I wonder how often that happens. Do you think that, I don't know, I'm wondering if they feel like they have to prove who they are, or I don't know, with this military thing. Do you have any thoughts on that, Pinkley?
Well, again, I think it goes back to our stereotypes of men and women, their different roles. And when you put something else in the mix of that, I think people become, I think first of all, people become very scared. They don't know how to deal with it. What do you do with this when you don't fit into a social construct of either or? And I really would like to believe that our society is changing and becoming more accepting. Like you said earlier in the history, this is not something new. This has been around. People have identified in different ways for thousands of years, but it's not been really talked about in a sense that it's accepted. And I think that was one of the reasons why we chose to have this topic this morning, is just a conversation around it. We're in no means the experts on this, but it was just an interesting idea about our very specific gender roles. And I think that comes up a lot in domestic violence situations also. Usually it's the woman who's being assaulted, but there's always a person in the audience who says, well, what about men? And it's really not even a woman or man issue. You know, there's violent relationships in gay and lesbian relationships. But for the most part, it is about the woman being assaulted, and that comes from a very patriarchal society and a norm. And again, that goes back to that very strict gender role about, as an example, you know, men don't cry, suck it up, you know, just do what you have to do. And whereas a woman, it's totally acceptable. So I think it's a very complicated and layered topic that we're talking about this morning.
Right. In fact, Kristen Beck, the Navy SEAL, who was just interviewed recently, says that was part of her thinking about why she wanted to become a Navy SEAL. And she served for 20 years. She's a highly decorated veteran with the Purple Heart. And there was, I mean, she showed her awards, and it was incredible the amount of, you know, honor that she had accrued. Bronze Star was another one she won. She served in Bosnia, Afghanistan, and Iraq. And the Navy SEALs are considered like the super military, right? And she mentioned that she thought maybe part of her reasoning at that point to become a Navy SEAL was to become one of the toughest of the tough. And it wasn't until she retired that she thought... She describes her years of living as a man as living like an onion, that under various layers she had hidden her female side. So,
well, she here's a quote from her. She says she joined the military hoping to actually suppress her confusion and even make it disappear. If I could be at the top level, it would maybe go away. Maybe I would cure myself, she said, was her rationale. And isn't that sad that you would think that you would have to cure yourself, and not as if you had a disease or if you had something that was incurable? And to go into a field that you thought you would have to, that would make it, whatever it was for her, go away. And the it part was her wanting to be a woman, and she was born in a male body, so things didn't match for her. The book that she wrote is her memoir, is called, I just wanted it, Warrior. What is it? Warrior Princess.
Yeah, I think I saw that. So.
Yeah, Warrior Princess. Uh huh.
A U.S. Navy SEAL's journey to coming out transgender.
Yeah, in a newly released memoir. And so, again, her name is, what was her name?
As male?
Female. What's her name now?
Kristen.
Kristen. There we go. Yeah. Wow. His name was Christopher Beck and lived this secret of intense life. He was also on the team of six that raided Osama bin Laden's compound just a few months ago and then retired, which is very interesting. So, again, the image of this, you know, of a Navy SEAL person being strong and, you know, all the physical and mental characteristics that you would think of, normally think of, society tells us to think of it in this way, was this person on a team of six. I mean, that's unbelievable. And then to come out later and say, no, I really want to be a woman. I mean, but the woman, man or woman, they're still that same person. Christine did what people thought of as a social norm of being a man, which is incredibly interesting. Hey, Dad.
Well, what do you think the future holds for her now?
I think that she'll have an opportunity to bring more awareness. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, she's retired now, so she doesn't have to have the fear of the same level of fear or concern while still being an active member. She's now a veteran. She said in her revelation she felt like she had been split down the middle. And some of her SEALs have been supportive while response from others has been more, has been a little different. I fought for 20 years for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So.
Yeah. And now that she's going for her happiness, she's getting some grief. Yeah.
But she's truth-telling. She's on her journey now of that unbelievable authenticity, which is so empowering. Living that authentic life. There was another interest. Deb, you said you had done some, or that you've had some experience and knowledge about Two-Spirit. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Native American people have recognized Two-Spirit people in their communities since day one. And someone who is Two-Spirit has both male and female characteristics. And in the Native communities, the Two-Spirit people were recognized as having special spiritual gifts and were often spiritual and general leaders in their communities. Of course, Native Americans have experienced genocide and oppression to the highest degree in the United States and Canada, and as do indigenous people around the world. Mm-hmm. So at this point, Two-Spirit is not always recognized in the same way that it was in the Native American history. So I think, I'm not sure which Native tribe or nation recently formalized the same-sex marriage for their community, but there was one that came out. It might have been Navajo. I'm not sure. I'd have to do some research, but they don't have any concerns about that and made that public. So Two-Spirit can be, it gave higher status rather than negative status and lower status, which I would say it's definitely given lower status in present day in almost all societies.
So what does this mean for the general person around somebody who is changing genders officially? How does somebody, if they do have some discomfort around this issue, how do they deal with themselves and how do they deal with the transgendered person? Any advice, Deborah?
I don't know how one would, you know, deal with it, but I imagine it's mostly like any other threshold that we come to as we go through our life, is where we sometimes have choices to make. Do we acquiesce and go with the social and culture norms, or do we recognize our true selves and love and support ourselves, you know, and present that way? Part of the whole issue with the military is when Kristen resigned or, you know, left the military and decided to present as female, the point is, and then in their military records, they want their gender assignment changed. And so there's been a lot of interesting process there. And so first of all, someone who is doing a gender change and wants their gender assignment changed in military records has to have a letter from a doctor who performed the surgery. They generally need a court order legally changing the gender in accordance with applicable state law. They need the original birth certificate, and they need a document reflecting the sponsor's name and, if applicable, gender following completion of the gender reassignment procedure for a spouse. So these are things that are quite complicated. And then if someone does decide to have the surgery, there's all things to think about. Number one, is it going to be covered by their medical insurance if they have it? Because remember, not all of us have medical insurance in the United States or everywhere around the world. So there's also things to consider. Is the gender reassignment surgery, will that require possible sterilization as a consequence? You know, if you're going from female to male, then you will not be able to have children. And if that's important to you, will you want to do that? There's also the thought that many trans people decide not to do the surgery and are happy living with the expression of how they identify. So there's just a lot of things to think about. But, of course, what they're looking for from the community around them is just to accept them as they are and realize they're the same person with the same skills, with the same education, with the same compassion and the same life experience. So that the hope is that people would be supportive and happy for them as they decide how they choose to identify themselves.
I think based on our earlier conversation, though, it's pretty optimistic to think that most people would just be happy that that person is feeling better and feeling the way they wanted to feel about themselves. I think that culturally we still have so much dependency on gender that it's just, I mean, it's astounding to me how important gender is in our culture. And,
well, I liken it to just having conversations around it, Heather. You know, just like us having this conversation today, it's so important to, in our own process, we're not only educating ourselves, but educating other people. I don't know all the answers. I mean, I don't know how I would personally try to know how I would work through or... If someone in my family, for example, that I've identified, you know, with being one way and then somehow all of a sudden they want to present differently. So, you know, it's a process. I think it's a process just like any other cultural change or acceptance. One, I would hope, would just be open to hearing more. And I think religion has such a huge factor in... it's either
how
this
we
way
react.
Or that way. And how we react. Yeah, exactly. And again, you know, like I said, I've been processing my own childhood and how I was brought up. And it's a very, I think it goes along with our deep-seated values and beliefs and how we were brought up. And, you know, in my world, it was either or. It was either you're a girl or you're a boy. Boys wear blue, girls wear pink.
Boys got the erector sets and the Legos, and girls got the magic oven maker.
Right. And, yeah, and even recently, like in some of the toys that are being advertised, you know, social media are changing up some of the colors and trying to be more inclusive, you know, not so much the girl-boy kind of thing. So I think I think change is happening. People are more recognizing whether they're accepting it or have a change in their belief system is another. I think history, you know, just makes those changes, and time will tell. But you know, just every person that, like this Navy SEAL, I mean, doesn't that, when you hear something like that, your first, I think the general society's first reaction was, how could that be? How could this be a woman feeling like a woman and doing all these quote-unquote male-type role activities? Mm-hmm. I mean, didn't the women have... you know, one of the wars, I mean, didn't we take and go into the factories and perform all the quote-unquote man jobs while they were all at war? And then when they all came back, we were expected to just go back and put our aprons on?
Yes.
And our high heels and go stand in the kitchen and bake?
Well, and I think also of the Civil War, I mean, there was at least one doctor, it was either Black or Blackwell, who wanted to help in the Civil War, and they wouldn't take her because she was a woman, and so she spent the whole Civil War working as a man, a male doctor, just so she
wow.
could get in there and help. So I think that, you know, she wasn't transgendered, but she had to
right.
be a cross-dresser in order to do the work she
yeah.
wanted to do.
Yeah. And what was it I heard the other day? R.K. Rowling, the...
J.K.
Rowling that wrote
yeah.
the book.
Yes.
What are the books called?
Harry Potter's.
Harry Potter's intentionally used her initials. Because she thought that if she had, used her name, people would not have taken her as serious about her writings.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's a very old technique for writers. Because women authors were seen as less capable and going to trivial subjects. So if they just used their
probably
initial...
all emotional, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, depending on the time of month.
Yeah.
those
are the kinds of seeds that get planted along the way that people start changing their thinking, I would hope. And... you know, I have a niece. I have a niece and a nephew, and I have in another family set. I have two nephews, and I got a pink football for one of my nephews, at a birthday party, and people were just aghast. They were just like, "Oh my gosh! You know, how could they make? Where did you find? Or who would ever think?" This is just wrong to have
yeah.
a pink football.
Well, yeah, that
you know,
reminds me of a story when I was pregnant with my son. I didn't know he was a boy, and I was out shopping, and I saw these little tights for babies, and I didn't have a lot of exposures to babies before I had my own. And I thought, oh, these are so practical, these little tights, because it'll keep their little legs warm. And so I'm looking at these tights, and... my mother, or this lady next to me, said, "Well, are you having a girl?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." And she said, "Well, boys don't wear tights."
Yeah,
and I looked
yeah.
at her and I said, "Well, if they're pink or if they're blue, can he wear them? Or if they're brown or black, can he wear them? I mean, you know, boy babies can't wear tights? Are you kidding me? I mean, there's all these rules out there about this that
right.
somebody has established. Who knew?" You know. but we do have these rules, supposedly, that have been established for so many generations.
And I think that they're being challenged right now in our society and in our world. I think that we are opening up and looking at things differently. And I have great hope for the future. I think it's a learning opportunity. It's exposure. You know, someone sitting in their living room and listening to this Navy SEAL person, again, the image of being just this, you know, male-bodied person doing male-bodied activities, mm-hmm. and then coming out and saying no. And I'm sure a lot of people will just be totally disgusted with it.
I've seen pictures of that soldier as a female, but his pictures as a male, very, very handsome man. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, I suspect that that has something to do with people's reactions to him becoming female. Mm-hmm. Or am I very naive on that, Deborah?
I think both of you are being naive on that. I think that Chris was a handsome male, and I think Kristen is a beautiful female. It really puts the hair up on the back of my neck, Connie, when we have to think about people being disgusted by someone deciding how they want to be identified and how they want to express themselves. I mean, yes, social.
Well, Deb, I'm not saying that the hair on my neck doesn't stand up either. I'm just saying that that's the reality. People, you know, we're talking about, I mean, people will have that reaction. Yes, it's awful, but our learning and our opportunities.
I want to give people who are having that kind of reaction any kind of credibility. I want them to stop and think before they would even go there. I mean, I think I feel an obligation to educate people and to change social and cultural norms. You know, I'm big on that lately these days. And I just think that if we are sitting here on the air and saying, yeah, pink is for girls and blue is for boys, I don't know, maybe I'm just in a negative point of view this morning, but it's really wearing on me right now.
Well, you can't deny that that's what our culture is used to.
I'm not saying that I agree with that. I'm not, for me, I am not saying I'm agreeing with that. I think that what I'm saying is that there is still a lot of expectation around that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we still do the pink is for girls and blue is for boys thing. You know, as a culture. So you can't deny that that exists. It may not
be
what you consider ideal, but it does exist.
I'm not denying it exists, absolutely not denying it exists. But I don't want to keep saying that it's there, and that kind of gives credibility to it, in my opinion, right now, this morning.
Well, you're that's why we are three women, three ways. Your point is well taken, and I appreciate the response that you're having. I do. And I think that most, you know, at times, I mean, I struggle navigating within my own family around these issues.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, for me to give a pink football to someone would be perfectly normal and natural. I have an expectation that people are going to be at the same level that I am, but they're not. And even though I may not have gone into this long conversation around gender and stereotypes, I just planted a seed with that gesture of, you know, wow, look at, and how many people did I have an exposure to when they had this not unexpected for me, but for them it was a reaction of this isn't right. But I presented in this very, very small way, wow, you guys, look, there's something else out here other than just this or this. And those are the
things.
Yeah, but
I've got to tell you, as long as we're being honest here, I have been around several people who have who are transgendered. I don't know whether they've all had surgery or not. And a couple of the people that I've been around, I'm perfectly content with. I'm perfectly comfortable with. But one of the people was like 6'5", and you know, he was dressed as a woman, and I thought, you know, this doesn't make me particularly comfortable. Very nice guy. Don't mind talking with him or anything. I don't mind having him as a friend, but it made me uncomfortable. So go for me, Deborah. Go after me, Deborah.
OMG, Heather. I can't believe you just said that. I'm very comfortable having him as my friend. I mean, what does it matter if a female is 6'5" or 4'5"? You know?
Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, it made me uncomfortable with this guy.
Yeah,
so,
and I just would question why. And if he's dressed as a female, then your guy friend would be your girlfriend. So, and I
just
struggle
based
with
on the clothing because
so.
He hadn't had any surgery.
Doesn't
yeah, that's
matter.
Another thing. When does the pronoun change, Deborah?
When they say it changes. When
okay.
your guy friend comes to you and says, I want you to call me your girlfriend, that's when it changes. It doesn't have to be by surgery or by birth certificate. If I wanted to tell you right now, Heather, I'm changing my name to David, you know, I would expect and want you to say, okay, I accept you that way, and I'm going to do my best to support you however you want to. That's what it kind of boils down to. There is no definitive line in any sand about how any of us want to identify. It's very fluid, and maybe that's what's confusing and causes concern for folks is when they aren't able to move that fluidly. I mean, it is hard. Can you imagine Chaz Bono, right? Another very public personality in person who has undergone the surgery to change from female to male. And I did actually watch Chaz's documentary, and his mother, Cher, was on it, and she mentioned her struggles of, you know, I've lost a daughter, but I've gained a son, and I just have to process that. And
going back to your point of you should just accept it as is, I think that people have a process of acceptance.
Sure.
I mean, we are brought up, for most of us, our generation will change. Maybe in the next, you know, maybe this generation won't be having the conversation that we're having now. But there was this huge, I also watched that documentary. And it was initially very painful for Cher. It was not accepted, but it was a process. And in that process, Chaz said, I am still the same person. You know, here is this. I mean, if you remember, you know, as a little more mature adults here in our, you know, middle age, I mean, I can remember seeing, I watched the Sonny and Cher show, and they brought their, you know, him on the show. She was at that time this curly, you know, the epitome of a little girl with curly blonde hair and, you know, just the cutest little thing. And, you know, to go from that image to, no, I am a boy and I have always felt that I have been different. And it took a long time and many, many struggles. He disclosed, you know, struggles of all sorts of coping strategies. And finally made that decision, has a partner who totally supported him in his decision, but it was a process. So, I think through awareness, again, conversations like this, we have people in my work all the time who are saying, today I have made a decision to ask you to refer to me as with a different pronoun, and I accept that, but it's taken education, it's taken time, it's taken my own process. I accept that, and I will do everything in my power to remember that you're asking me to identify you as how you are asking me to identify you as, and take off my own lens of what I think you should be, because I think you should either be a girl or a boy, and either refer to you as a he or she. I mean, people are using even the pronoun they. They've taken the he and she completely out of it. Now they...
Well, as a former English teacher, that's so grammatically incorrect.
Heather, and I think that that is generally the most popular response. I mean, and popular, I don't mean in, because it's popular, because that's not what I'm meaning. I mean, that's the most
sure.
general...
Common.
The general response. Common.
Well, and I also think, Deborah, although I certainly respect your opinions and everything, I also think that just, you know, that we also need to respect other people's opinions. And if they are uncomfortable and they need to go through a process before they can accept a person, however that person wants to be accepted, I mean, I think we need to respect that that's an issue. We might not agree with how that person is behaving or, well, I shouldn't say behaving, because behaving is, if there's a behavior that's inappropriate, then that's just inappropriate. But you can't really tell people how, you know, that just because I'm comfortable with this, you need to be comfortable with this, or there's something wrong with you. It is a process, and not everyone is going to be comfortable with that. So, you know, I think we need to respect that as well.
You know, I'm not trying to disrespect you. I'm just feeling a lot of responsibility right now to really broaden the conversation quickly, because we have people who are, as Connie Sue said, and you have said, both sides of the situation are in a lot of pain about it. So, I mean, it thinks that, in my mind, that this is a excuse me, something that we really need to broaden our perspective on and our views on and open up and be open to all possibilities, right? Not,
sure.
I mean, sometimes when people share some of their most intimate thoughts or feelings or gender expressions with us, and we react in a way that's surprised or outraged or any kind of extreme reaction can be really devastating to them. And I,
sure.
In my work with survivors, as an advocate, when sometimes someone would be sharing one of their most devastating physical, emotional, sexual assaults, and we're in the room with them, we're present with them, and we're hearing that story, and very often I'm feeling it in my body as a form of empathy, right? But
mm-hmm.
how I react to that the next time I speak is really important. So if
yes.
I go, oh, my God, that's the most horrible thing I've ever heard, that kind of can set up a different response or feeling for them. If I go, oh, my God, I'm sorry that happened to you. Do you want to tell me more about that? You know. So the first response is my response, right, my inside response, but or my own personal response maybe, but I'm feeling the responsibility as an advocate, I guess, right now, more to say
mm-hmm.
that if we can tap down those responses and just try to be as open and supportive as we can when people get the courage to make these kinds of changes for themselves. Because, yeah, it is a very difficult thing for everyone on both sides of the issue, on both sides of the feelings and the emotions. But what it comes down to, Heather, you said the behaviors have to be appropriate. And
I mean, you can have whatever feelings you have, but how you express that and how you behave with the other person is the crucial thing. And I don't care if you're talking with anybody, it doesn't matter whether they're transgendered or have two heads or whatever. You have to be nice, you have to be polite, and you have to be somewhat empathetic with another person, just because that's how we interact as a society. Ideally, anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah. that you know, as long as you don't act on it in a way that's hurtful to somebody else, you can have and take your time processing whatever you need to of your own feelings, at least I think. But, yeah, because, you know, I mean, I think that there are ways that we see that we should behave ideally. But then sometimes we also have to acknowledge that sometimes we don't always feel ideally initially. You know, it needs to be something that we work on for ourselves. And I think as this issue becomes more and more common, which I think is very common in our culture today, is it just because of the field that we work in? Or I think that, you know, I mean, I see transgendered people a lot. I've encountered transgendered people a lot. Sometimes I haven't even known they're transgendered until they mention it. When I was a kid, I didn't see anybody who was transgendered, or at least not anybody that I knew. And so is it a more acceptable phenomenon today? Deborah, take me on here.
I wouldn't use the word acceptable. I would say, but we are becoming more aware of it, and people are choosing to make that decision for themselves more and more. And I think it's just kind of like an evolution of people realizing that our gender identity is more than a binary situation. It can be. It always has been since time immemorial, you know, since people were born, however we got here, one believes we got here on this earth, that there has been people who have struggled with gender identity, especially when we only have two choices.
Yeah.
And if that choice is determined physiologically or intellectually and spiritually, you know, like and in your soul. So those are all different ways how we see ourselves. And when you only have two choices, that's really limiting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that as we evolve as human beings and as we learn more and recognize more from our past that, hey, this isn't new. This has been going on. It's actually documented in annals, you know, from year 200. So it's like, you know, here we are 1,800 years later, and we're still saying, oh, is this acceptable?
Yeah.
But it just takes, like I've been saying, I kind of feel a responsibility for us to move along this a little faster.
You feel a sense of urgency. I think some of it, too, is impatience. It's like, why is it taking us this long? Why are we still having these conversations? But I also
we're human
think
beings.
That,
you know,
yeah,
we're
but
human
I also,
beings.
I think it's also important for us to, for me to remember that when I'm asking people to change some of their ideas or beliefs or acceptance of other people is to meet them where they're at. There has to be some level of, you know, understanding or awareness of where a person is at in that context or that conversation. I think for the most part, you get better buy-in or, you know, a person going away going, I hadn't thought about that before and I'll think about that.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean I'm going to change my mind about it, but I'll certainly think about it.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to give this website that I found, which is fascinating. It's tghistory.org, and it gives all sorts of information about transgender, the history of transgender issues, and it gives an actual timeline, which is fascinating to read. It also shows the Trans Pride flag, which I didn't even know existed, but it's been out there for 12 years. And it also, Deborah, you were talking about the Two-Spirit. It also actually, it actually has a recording of a Lakota Two-Spirit singing a traditional horse song.
Nice.
And
it's
you know, so I think it's a kind of a fascinating website if anybody wants to go and check that out. And Deborah, do you have a quote for us?
I do. You know I do. I found, and here's some that are a reflection of how I'm feeling. Here's one.
Oh, do we need to censor this, Deborah?
So this is a quote from Annie Lennox, and she says, "I love to be individual, to step beyond gender. And that's how I'd like to end the show today.
Okay. Well, and I think it's a very, very, I thought this was fascinating as a topic, and perhaps I'm not as sophisticated as you other two about this topic. I do find it fascinating, and I do encourage people to be whoever they are. So, final words, Pinkley?
Whoever you are, whatever you are, we accept you. How's that?
That's perfect.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely
all right.
Perfect.
Okay.
And thank you for joining us today, and please come next
week. Thanks for listening. And we are three women.
Three ways.
Three divas.
Awesome.
Until next Saturday.
Yep.